Aclaró que no se pretende privatizar el líquido vital, como han mencionado ciertos dirigentes indígenas.
Pero sus reclamos son legítimos. ¿Por qué tienen que mentir? ¿Por qué tienen que decir que se va a privatizar el agua? Lo cual es una grosera mentira. No puede existir. La Constitución lo prohíbe.
Pidió a los integrantes de las 7.000 juntas de regantes del país que lean la Ley de Recursos Hídricos.
Los dirigentes manifestaron que con la ley en la mano no existirán más presiones de quienes antes manejaban el agua.
Si no sale la minga, cortas el agua. Si no sales a las movilizaciones, cortas el agua. Si no colabora en todo lo que se dice, cortas el agua. Eso se termina, compañero. Ahora ya no.
El presidente de la Comisión de Soberanía Alimentaria, Miguel Carvajal, comentó que luego de 1.600 reuniones en comunidades de todo el país, se logró plasmar las demandas sociales.
Pero esta ley recoge más de 15 años de demandas sociales, de demandas del movimiento indígena, pero también de los montubios, de los afrodescendientes, también de los habitantes de las ciudades.
La ley de aguas recibió respaldo hoy, aunque a la Plaza Grande también llegaron indígenas que están inconformes con la norma. Verónica Rivadeneira, Telesur Ecuador.
La Organización para la Cooperación y el Desarrollo Económico, la OCDE, en su nuevo reporte revela que el crecimiento económico de las naciones del mundo continúa mostrando una gran disparidad. En su informe Perspectivas del Desarrollo Global, la entidad señala que esa desigualdad ha permitido que China y la India representen casi una cuarta parte del Producto Interno Bruto Mundial. El organismo que agrupa a las 38 principales economías mundiales considera que esa desaceleración económica vivida por las naciones emergentes les impedirá converger hacia el ingreso promedio de los países ricos hacia el año 2050. De acuerdo a los expertos del organismo, el aumento de la productividad es la clave para que los países en desarrollo puedan alcanzar el ingreso promedio de los más avanzados. El reporte mencionó que los países en desarrollo tendrán que reducir la gran diferencia de su nivel de productividad con los más avanzados, en particular con Estados Unidos. Por otro lado, la OCDE señaló en su reporte que el consumo de las clases medias cada vez más numerosas en las grandes economías que no forman parte de la zona OCDE emergerá como el nuevo motor de la demanda mundial. También resaltó que independientemente del bloque de los denominados BRICS, Brasil, Rusia, India, China y Sudáfrica, existen otras economías de un tamaño importante que podrían tener colectivamente un impacto significativo en la economía mundial. Por su parte, el secretario general de la Organización de Estados Americanos, José Miguel Insulza, dijo que la práctica ampliada de la democracia ha sido insuficiente para eliminar la injusticia en la distribución de la riqueza. El titular de la OEA sostuvo en un documento enviado a organizaciones civiles que ni la ampliación de la democracia ni el mejor crecimiento económico han permitido ampliar las perspectivas de una vida mejor para muchos ciudadanos. No han convertido a nuestros países, dijo, en una sociedad más igualitaria. Enfatizó que aún prevalece un alto grado de injusticia en la distribución de la riqueza y en el acceso a los bienes sociales, una desigualdad que es del tamaño tal que incluso daña el tejido democrático. Insulza admitió que desde la OEA no pueden obligar a realizar acciones a los estados, solo presentan convenciones para que las firmen, pero son las personas de cada país quienes deben manifestarse. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Argentina se consolida como el país de la región con el mayor nivel de igualdad salarial.
La distribución del ingreso de los trabajadores en Argentina se ubicó en el primer trimestre del año, según el coeficiente de Gini, que se utiliza mundialmente para medir el reparto de la riqueza de un país, como el más igualitario de la región, e incluso con un nivel que supera a las naciones desarrolladas.
Uno como PYME se siente premiado. La realidad es que nosotros, nuestras utilidades las tratamos de reinvertir en tecnología o mejorar en algunos aspectos la calidad de nuestros trabajadores.
Ese gobierno nos favoreció muchísimo, muchísimo a la empresa nacional, a la PYME. Nos favoreció, le dio trabajo. Que es lo que no teníamos en la década del 90.
A pesar de las exigencias de los fondos buitres que buscan perjudicar su imagen, con este resultado, la Argentina también se puso a centésima de la mejor marca histórica registrada por el país, que según la Comisión Económica para la América Latina, CEPAL, fue en octubre de 1974.
Hay un sistema de garantía social que ha incluido a la familia vía asignación universal por hijo, a las embarazadas y a los adolescentes vía el programa Progresar. Es decir, hay una fuerte política de contención social y hay una fuerte política salarial mediante la realización de convenciones colectivas de trabajo.
Si se compara el nivel Gini de Argentina con lo de los países miembros de la Organización para la Cooperación y Desarrollo Económico, OSDEC, el nivel de igualdad es mayor al de Israel, Turquía y Estados Unidos.
Estos 10 años de crecimiento de nuestro país ha sido precisamente liberado del tutelaje de los organismos internacionales que nos decían las recetas que había que hacer para más empobrecernos y más endeudarnos. El camino transitado es un camino de reafirmación soberana, de que como Estado tenemos la posibilidad de construir un propio destino.
En la medición por hogares, el 60% del total de la población de Argentina percibe ingresos medios de $1,200 al mes. Edgardo Esteban, Telesur, Buenos Aires.
Estás escuchando el informativo Pacífica. Los invitamos a visitar nuestra página blog en pueblossinfronteras.wordpress.com, donde podrá opinar y encontrar más detalles sobre las noticias de Estados Unidos, América Latina y el mundo desde una perspectiva progresista.
A continuación, nuestra compañera Faneli Millán nos habla sobre una talentosa artista de origen hindú que canta en varios idiomas.
Necesito cantar. Es una forma de expresarme y para mí es una necesidad. He intentado hacer otras cosas, pero siempre vuelvo al canto.
La cantautora indoamericana neoyorquina Kavita Shah visita Los Ángeles. Su amplio repertorio multifacético está a disposición del pueblo angelino en el centro de la ciudad, en el lugar conocido como Blue Whale, la ballena azul. Respondiendo a la pregunta sobre el mensaje del cantor y las fuerzas que le relacionan con su público, ella dice:
la voz humana puede tocar como mover a cualquier persona solo por el lado biológico, ¿no? La voz es una cosa primordial. Para mí cantar sí tiene ese aspecto medio espiritual en relación al ser humano.
Kavita Shah dijo al informativo Pacífica que su gran aportación cultural a California será sin duda sus raíces multinacionales y la función de estas en la escena artística norteamericana.
Yo solo puedo ser yo misma, así que lo que traigo es mi historia siendo una persona de descendencia hindú, crecida en Nueva York, hablando español, hablando portugués, francés y mezclando esas culturas distintas que me han influenciado en mi vida.
La neoyorquina ha visitado muchos países, entre ellos el Perú, donde nos asegura que se inspiró para una de sus canciones centradas en el pueblo inca.
Creo que esa canción que escribí se llama Moray y se trata de un sitio arqueológico en el Perú construido por los incas. Yo estaba viviendo en Perú estudiando la arquitectura incaica por un verano y siempre me encantaba ese lugar porque es un sitio de círculos redondos, como un anfiteatro más o menos. Es un lugar muy mágico y allí estuve y me puse a componer ahí en el centro con mi iPhone. Las letras tratan de ese tema social del pueblo indígena, de dónde estarían si estuvieran aquí hoy. Las palabras dicen, ¿dónde están los indios del valle? ¿Dónde están los indios del mar? ¿Dónde están y a dónde se han ido? ¿Dónde están y dónde estarán?
Kavita Shah nos dijo que el poeta chileno Pablo Neruda tuvo algo que ver con esa canción.
Me inspiré también por el poema épica de Pablo Neruda, que se llama Las alturas de Machu Picchu, en que él también se está preguntando quiénes eran esa gente que ahora nosotros estamos intentando de conocer. Ahora estamos aquí admirando lo que dejaron atrás, pero quiénes eran y, bueno, dónde estarían.
La neoyorquina compartió con nosotros su anhelo de llevar su música a los pueblos de América Latina y el Caribe.
Espero que este programa haga más conciencia de mi música en el mundo hispanohablante. Entonces espero que se pueden comunicar conmigo por las redes sociales. Tengo un website, un sitio web que es www.kavitashamusic.com, que se escribe kavitashamusic.com. Y estoy también en Facebook y en Twitter. Mi nombre en Twitter es Canta Kavita, muy fácil.
Era la cantautora indoamericana Kavita Shah, en Los Ángeles. Para Informativo Pacífica, Paneli Millán.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a la Multistatal Telesur, al diario La Jornada, a la Asociación Latinoamericana de Educación Radiofónica, a Más Voces de España, a Farco de Argentina y a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez.
And welcome to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Today is the 3rd of July. Whoopie-doo, Independence Day is coming up tomorrow, so it's all get independent. It's about time. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I do a show twice a week. This is the shorter show. Today we're going to be covering the American Civil Liberties Union's historic turn to the left, or let's say turn to the liberal side, when they actually on Monday voted to support a moratorium on laws against camping and sleeping, which they have avoided even bringing to a vote for 25 years. So this is actually good news in a certain sense, although whether this is going to lead anywhere or will indicate actions on other fronts, hard to say. I'll be playing some audio from that particular meeting on Monday, and also be taking your calls. This is a live show, if you're listening to it on July 3rd. You can call in at 427-3772, 831-427-3772, and I will try to make sure I actually notice your call. Looks like the phone line is working. And so, hey, you're invited to call in. I'm also going to do a few updates from the last rather eventful and rather turbulent Sunday show, which had a number of callers. Thank you, callers, for calling in on Sunday. I thought that was very nice to have other people other than me. And the loyal Dr. Michael O'Grady, who is also stroking his beard and looking on in the studio. He's now a free radio broadcaster himself, and that really should be a lesson to all of you out there. If you want to be on the air on free radio, all you got to do is fork over, I don't know, was it $30 a month or something, or less if you do some work. That's for rent. We don't really make any profit off this one, but we have to pay the folks in whose building we're located, a secret location, of course, because we are a pirate radio station, so it's the truth. But if you want to become a member of Free Radio, if you have, for example, stuff you want to put out to the community, consider it. We actually, most people are accepted. There's the occasional person that got turned down. I'm still waiting to put on Pat Kittle, who was he was rejected at the last meeting, but that is something that can be reconsidered as well. Pat is not one of my favorite speakers on certain subjects. On others, he's got more backbone than every single city council member. So it's an interesting mix with when you're dealing with people of different shades of opinion and different dispositions. And you can become a member of Free Radio, again, by going to freakradio.org and downloading an application and getting it to us. Interested. We want more people. We want more voices. Radio, is it going to live or is it going to die? I don't know, but we're still here. Anyway, welcome to the show. Let's begin with a little introductory music here. I actually may have a little something new to play if it was able to slip it into my musical bag here. I often wander the mall, Pacific Garden, I should say the Garden, mall is a little strong. I guess it is kind of a mall. It's increasingly commercialized, public space-starved area where if you have money and you don't mind hanging out at the trendy sidewalk cafes, it's a very nice place in some respects. If you want simply to exercise basic First Amendment rights, it's not such a hot place as it used to be. It's become more of a kind of a place for those who have money and drives away those who don't look like they do. Anyway, let's begin with a little something from August Bullock's It's No Wonder We're Deranged.
I've born in New York City with a black cat on my tail. Never listened to my teachers and I never really cared. People said if I was good that God would hear my prayers. But everywhere I searched for truth I only found despair. I'm a man thrown overboard. And I must be 20 miles from the shore. I've been down and I've been cheated like a bandit on the road. Been pushed in all directions till there's no place left to go. So I won't believe in Jesus till he calls me on the phone. And I won't believe in heaven till I find myself a home. I'm a man thrown overboard. And I must be 20 miles from the shore. If you've heard the score, know that though I'm leaving, I won't be gone for long. Remember to be careful when you're walking in the dark. You may think you know the way when in fact you are lost. I'm a man blown overboard. And I must be 20 miles from the shore.
And again, that was August Bullock doing Overboard. And this is 7 years old, the CD. I found August, though, playing on the sidewalk. He actually gave me this CD. I think I kicked down a donation. He was playing music in an illegal spot, like most places are on the mall these days, with the expanded forbidden zones that have essentially gobbled up 95, 96, 97% of the mall or more. But the music is, some of these songs have a sort of some political content, admittedly perhaps somewhat older political content and somewhat, should we say, sort of passing political content. Anyway, if you got political content and you want to call in on issues around Santa Cruz that concern civil rights for poor people, which is my focus, please do, 427-3772. And away we'll go. Issue of the Good Times just came out. Has an interesting article on the Santa Cruz 11 called 7-Up. It is available free. And it's also called Then There Were Four, because there are only four of the falsely indicted Santa Cruz 11, activists who were part of the Occupy movement, who were inside a vacant bank building that is still vacant, leased by Wells Fargo at 75 River Street. And there's four people who are still being charged in a political witch hunt with, I think it's felony vandalism, a felony, obviously, which carries 4 years in prison as a maximum sentence and I think some other massive fine. And DA Bob Lee, or one of his lieutenants, are trying to squeeze money out of these four essentially poor low-income defendants who are, they have no specific evidence of vandalism whatsoever, but they claim that their mere presence in the building, along with hundreds of others, was aiding and abetting, and therefore they're just as responsible for any damage done in the building, which to me is horseshit. Of course, I'm not the most unbiased person. I was one of the 11 charged, but that doesn't mean that what I'm saying isn't true, accurate, and to the point. And I think it is. But you can be the judge yourself. Read the article. Then there were four. The article doesn't have the background on some of the deeper issues, which have to do with why the people occupied the bank. Some of it had to do with the fact that there are several thousand homeless people in the city of Santa Cruz, of whom only a fraction have any shelter during the winter when this happened. It was in late November and early December of 2011. Some of it have to do with the fraudulent foreclosures that were standard operating procedure and still are, or so the claim goes, by Wells Fargo, probably the biggest lender in the country, and this kind of massive corruption and ripping off of poor and middle-class people continues unabated. Instead of the DAs going after those folks, we have them going after the people who are protesting this stuff. You know, insofar as Bob Lee is one of the contributors to his campaign in 2010 was Wells Fargo, and that's the basis now of a new motion by, I believe, attorney Alexis Briggs to stop this prosecution and to force Bob Lee to disqualify himself because he did not reveal this contribution by Wells Fargo. Whether you believe that's sufficient or not to disqualify him from the whole matter, the whole issue is costing hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I've been trying to fathom what it's all about. It seems to me part of it is simply the juggernaut activity, the involuntary spasm, the unstoppable machinery that operates almost automatically of a corrupt system that really has no accountability in the community. I mean, it is true, Bob Lee recently ran for a DA, and he was unchallenged. Nobody ran against him. I should have run as a write-in candidate, probably, although I think you may have to be an attorney to run for district attorney here in Santa Cruz. You know, I've tried to fathom why this all is. Is it because Chief Vogel needed to sort of burnish his badge because the police wanted to look tough for the people in town who were ranting about, you know, enabling the homeless, the Take Back Santa Cruz crew, and the other conservative forces in Santa Cruz? Is it because he was a part of the general movement, he and other police departments throughout the country, to crush the Occupy movement and make sure that we didn't have something like a rising up of the people, as happened in other countries, although it's hard to say where it's happened successfully recently? I don't know. All I know is that their cases are coming up again. Four of them are facing these absurd charges of felony vandalism for simply being in a building. And the article is pretty interesting. It has a lot of fairly accurate information. As I said, not much deep background on why this is all happening. Why it was the building was originally taken over in the first place, and why we should be concerned with other issues than, well, we should certainly be concerned with the corruption of the DA's office that allows this to continue, but why we shouldn't be concerned with prosecuting those who are engaged in real crime instead of wasting our resources here. That's not, you know, even mentioned. And there's also a phony picture that's on the page 12, which is where this article begins, Santa Cruz Weekly section of the Good Times. The two papers are now combined, as many of you probably know who are regular readers. There's only one of the Santa Cruz 11 in that photo that I can see. Maybe there's two. don't think so. I think there's only one. And the inference is, and it's a you know, a photo of the Santa Cruz 11. But they don't have a photo of the Santa Cruz 11. They have a photo of a bunch of people locking arms and blocking the bank, which no one was charged with doing. No one was charged with blocking the police, although many people did. And they, the police wisely decided to avert a riot and backed off, engaged in negotiations, and after 3 days, people left. And we thought that was that. And, of course, it turned out that the Chief Vogel and D.A. Bob Lee and the conservative forces wanted to have their pound of flesh, and so they arrested people 2 months later who had nothing to do with the organizing of this, who were activists in the community who were not afraid to be recognized going into the bank. I, for example, went in there because I thought it was a newsworthy event, and also because I supported the occupation. I didn't plan it. I didn't suggest vandalism was something I would support. I didn't engage in illegal activity as far as directly violating any laws. That was what the came out of the court process. And I guess I feel these guys have had enough. Actually, it's one woman and three men: Gabriela Ripley Phipps, Brent Adams, Cameron Lorando, and Angel Alcantara, or Frank Alcantara, I think, as he calls himself now. Now that'll be coming up. I'll be doing more information about that as it develops. I've asked Alexis Briggs to kind of brief me on send me her motion for overturning Bob Lee's prosecution based upon his getting money from Wells Fargo and not disclosing it. We've thought of doing a panhandle in for Wells Fargo because Lee has said if the defendants want to pay $23,000, which is the inflated sum that Wells Fargo claimed cost them in damages for some broken furniture, graffiti, some poo-poo in some of the rooms when they turned off the water and the plumbing and the heating and so forth, and people did their stuff elsewhere, then everything would be fine, provided people provided the these four people kicked down $6,000 each. That is to say that he actually said that on tape. It's sort of like a payoff. If you pay off Wells Fargo, everything's going to be okay. And it was kind of strange that he would do this on videotape. You can actually find it online. You have to go back on the Santa Cruz Indy Media stories to find it, but you can. It was in a colloquy with me where this information came out when we were doing I think it was a small protest right outside the county building. And he came over and he drove up and parked right next to us, and we asked him some questions, and we videoed him. And Bob can't shut up sometimes. He just can't keep his mouth shut. He's an amiable guy. I mean, he really is. He's a nice guy. The only trouble is his behavior is not nice on, in terms of how it treats people. And I see, I think I see Michael here wanting to get a word in edgewise. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, but he's also protecting his people who gave him money for his election, So he owes the bank for supporting and helping to win the election.
Well, I don't even know if that he actually even considers that, but he certainly should have revealed that information before he started. And I think it tends to give the appearance of possible corruption. I don't think it's fair necessarily to say it gives you conclusive proof or anything of that sort, but it may be enough for him to say, okay, I'll hand this over to an independent prosecutor. Although the idea of spending more time on this issue in court we're talking about a case that, again, is from 2011, of the closing months of 2011, and we're in 2014. So it's
The simplest way. Am I open here?
You are.
The simplest way, really, to do it is to scrap the whole thing, and by that means you'd save money. It's and you'd save some face. And as for the bank, they have been caught with a manual of how to forge papers to claim ownership of property. So they're 25,000 or 12,000 or a few thousand, whatever it costs in real terms, is nothing to the bank. So who cares about that? Who cares about the bank? They've made lots of money by forging documents to show that they own the property, so they've gotten well paid. So let's just drop the whole thing and move on.
Now, the bank actually, what you're talking about is the attempt. You have to show when you're doing a foreclosure that you have the actual ownership of the property you're foreclosing on. And what banks have done in bundling stuff into securities and derivatives, they've lost track, I think, of this stuff. Although my understanding of this is not entirely clear, but there was another scandal about a fraudulent foreclosure manual. That's also on the Santa Cruz Indy Media site. I suggest people can go there, indybay.org/Santa Cruz. But let's move beyond that. I don't have too much new information on that. Let's turn instead to some stuff from the streets. This is within the last few weeks. Let's hear it and comment on it, perhaps.
Body Care, which is part of the New Leaf area. Talking with...
Yeah, this is Luke Payne. How you doing?
All right, Luke, and it's about 2:10. You're looking pretty good in your cap.
I bought this full retail, this hat. I paid $40 at the hat store down the street like about a week ago because I like to shop down here and spend money when I have it just so that when I give them a hard time or make a stand on something, I'm not like one of those people that lets other people pick up the bills. I take my duty as a retail drone very seriously.
You continue to kick in as a consumer fetishist, Dave.
It's the least I can do to consume with the best of my ability to demonstrate my economic viability for the system while I still have the chance to do that.
I see. The system being buying useless items from people who are charging you too much and driving away poor people. I don't know if that's the best thing
to do. It's a perfect closed loop of consumer harmony, and I'm humbly grateful for the opportunity to fit in any way in their system.
You're the man, Luke. So I know that you you say you were a performer down here, but
I used to play music down here because I'm pretty decent musician over the last 25 years.
You aren't saying that Gina Ramirez and the hosts drove you away,
No, nobody did. It was just that when I play my instrument, I would have these armed men would show up and stand over me with their hands on their hips and looking like they wanted to kick my ass. And when I asked who they were, they said they worked for the city. And so basically what I did is I made the decision on my own that rather than trying to resist and create problems, I just give up and go away so that my creativity,
Problem solved, Luke.
Yeah, because I was making music and they told me one day that somebody was watching The Price is Right and that the sound of my horn, even though I'm a classically trained musician, was disturbing and that they were ready to arrest me if I didn't immediately stop. I asked them to which law that was breaking, and then they
unreasonably got disturbing noise.
Well, they were more vague. It was more like they did that kind of like, I'm uncomfortable in my own skin and I might just lose it, so maybe you should just shut up vibe.
Interesting. So how long have you been an expatriate from the downtown music scene?
Oh, well, I think the last time I tried to play music down here was probably maybe a year and a half. I used to come down at Christmas sometimes because my last attempt to keep doing it was I would dress up really nice, sometimes even in like a suit or something, and then not put anything out to give anyone any indication that I had any expectation of getting anything out of it. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, I was hoping that I could fall back on a freedom of speech argument if I was dressed well and spoke well and didn't ask for money, and I would be like excluded from the, what do they call that, profiling of whatever. But I guess it wasn't quite enough because apparently the sound of a classically trained trombone player was very, very disturbing to some anonymous person who wouldn't name themselves, and they unleashed the authorities on me. So.
Well, at least you didn't try to chalk on the sidewalk and get busted by...
I don't want
to
get killed.
...passing Mia Duquette, who still works for the Parks and Rec in spite of harassing people for First Amendment activity.
I used to pick flowers and give them to people who looked like they needed a good mood booster, but then they threatened me for that, and so now, I go buy flowers, I can afford them,
Mm-hmm.
But, it's just one of those things. I know they're doing their best to try to make the world safe for whoever still has a little bit of money.
For shoppers, yes, that's where it's at. And
The thing about it is, Robert, is that the system works perfectly, and everyone who counts is fine. And how you know is because if you look around and then you make sure that anyone who's not doing fine doesn't count, and then you gather up all the people that are doing fine, and then they're all doing fine. So therefore, the system works.
It makes sense, Luke. By the way, So, when was the last time you played down here?
Say, about a year, probably a year and a half ago. I kind of gave up.
You know, I mean, in theory, if you don't have a display device on the sidewalk, you can play anywhere you want.
Yeah. That was my theory, but the thing about it is, I take it very personally when people try to suppress my constitutional rights, so I try to pick my battles, because I don't really want to die anytime soon, and they have that give me liberty or give me death, so I've decided to exercise my option to self-censor rather than have to fight the entire system.
I understand. It's a prudent move. I myself have been somewhat slow in getting back to city council with my little audio recorder after having been arrested there a month ago for having it in the wrong place. I'm not attending it.
Sometimes freedom of speech just means the freedom of just wait until they tell you what to think and then say it and then shut the hell up.
Sounds like Bertolt Brecht, maybe. Then you... Any case, so we've been talking with...
Luke Payne.
And Luke, thank you. Continuing my search for performance space on Pacific Avenue, here we are in front of Santa Cruz Gifts and Jewelry.
Right.
And there is a bench here that sets up a forbidden zone, which hosts Gina Ramirez patrols. She's walking by now. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But there's a broad sidewalk here as well. In theory... Nope, no space here at all. I'm looking at an area that has some space. And in fact, I went through this whole block between Cathcart and Soquel about a week ago. And the strategically positioned phone booths, sidewalk cafes, those items mainly, and the bench, make it completely illegal to set up display devices anywhere along this street, along this block. With the exception of the places on the other side of the street that I've mentioned. So at the corner of...
Actually, what you're hearing here are some sort of excerpts from one of the expeditions that... I don't know if you were along on this one or not, Michael, but on a number of occasions we've gone down there, sometimes with video cameras, sometimes with a piece of yarn that measures 14 feet in length, because 14 feet is the distance you have to be from a building... from a telephone, from an intersection, from a sidewalk cafe, from a bench, from a trash can, from a trash compactor, from a directory sign. Quite a list of items that you have to be 14 feet away from. And, of course, most of the sidewalks in other parts of the street, parts of the city are less than 10 feet wide. And so in those areas, it's completely illegal to be in business districts where there are buildings or fences. Because there's no room whatsoever to legally sit down, spare change, set up a performance space of any kind, play a guitar, busk, register voters at a table. All these things are illegal. Now, it doesn't mean that you're not going to find people doing them, and it doesn't mean the police are going to bust them for it. Because we found in the last year, almost everybody on Pacific Avenue is in an illegal spot. And there's been some talk at the city council. In fact, there was a resolution at the city council and apparently a directive to various staff members to redesign the forbidden areas so that there was, if not more space, at least better spaces for street performers. Because currently, unlike 10 or 15 or 20 years ago, when it was, if not legal, it was tolerated that musicians would play with their backs to a building and play out into the street. Now, essentially, you have to play at the curb toward the buildings, toward the businesses, which we had Tom Noddy, who's a street performer, he's a bubble performer professionally, but he was part of the street, helped to form the Street Performers Guild and the Street Performers Guidelines, which were a voluntary set of rules that performers agreed upon, that were not mandated by any law. You didn't suffer any legal penalties if you violated them, but there was peer pressure that people were trying to operate as good neighbors, and I think that's the wave of the future. That's the way to go, the good neighbor approach. But, you see, merchants, greedy merchants, and rather... entrenched, I would call them, it's bigotry really, but people of a conservative cast of mind who feel that some groups of people don't need to be in the downtown area unless they're spending money and should be essentially be discouraged the way they like to put it, is make it less enabling in Santa Cruz. Those kinds of people have essentially gained more power in the last two decades than they had before. There was a more liberal, somewhat more liberal period, though the sleeping ban has been in force since the late 70s, a law that makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep, even though there are no legal places for 95% of them. And so, in essence, it's a form of torture, it's a form of criminalization of homeless people just being. And it's a form of cruelty, and it's also, fundamentally, it gives the police license to drive people away. But there was, as I say, another way to go in terms of street performers and people using public spaces, which is to have a kind of a voluntary understanding. That is, where street performers say, this is sort of our understanding of what we do, and not sort of, this is the law, you will do it or else. You know, and some people will say, fuck you, I got a right, this is, 4th of July is coming up, you know, don't tread on me. And frankly, I have some sympathy for that myself, big time. But I also have sympathy for the fact that people need to share public spaces. I think that's important. But you don't share them by having merchants monopolize them, commercialize them, essentially spread their merchandising all over them, and then create laws that drive everybody else away, while setting up their signs up and down Pacific Avenue, commercial signs, that though they're illegal. And again, I'm not a fan of the law. I mean, in a certain sense, it doesn't really matter to me that they're legal. The real question is, are they, you know, blocking people? Are they encumbering people? Most of the signs are not. I mean, there are some of them are badly placed and interfere with, arguably, with disabled people. But the point is, there's a double standard. The businesses are allowed to get away with. There is no question that the signs are all illegal. If you look at the zoning law, no freestanding sidewalk signs are allowed by commercial businesses. They just aren't. Now, that could be changed. It probably will be changed once this is bruited about enough. But it shows you how different the standards are for treating businesses and ordinary human beings. And, of course, it means that businesses and the dogs of the non-homeless, housed, more well-to-do people have more rights than poor people, elderly people, disabled people downtown. It's simply a fact. And you can see it by looking at the stats around selective enforcement of the laws. And we at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, are trying to draw together those kinds of stats into a really recognizable form so the community can be aware that in spite of all the terrorizing being done by different groups, including the police department, around public safety, with the suggestion that somebody sleeping outside is a major hazard, or the notion that somehow the fractional needle disposal problem, which is like 0.1% or less of the discarded needles ends up in the environment, is some kind of major hazard that requires people to be treated with suspicion, with fear, like bags of trash. And we have to start igniting the drug war stereotypes and hysteria that I thought we'd begun to try to get beyond in the last 20, 30, 40, or 50 years. In any case, I'm going to turn now to some more recent interviews. And these are interviews that happened this last weekend or Monday, when I generally to the Red Church and hang out at the Calvary Episcopal, where there's a meal every Monday between 5 and 7, kind of a service and then a coffee and then a meal. And then that's followed by, in this particular Monday, usually it's the fourth Monday of the month. In this case, it was the fifth Monday because I think some conflicts. I think it was a holiday conflict or something. But the American Civil Liberties Union's local board of directors had a meeting. And this meeting was quite a historic meeting because of the presence of a large number of homeless people. At least that's my understanding and explanation of it. And I'd like to give some credit to the five members of the board who ultimately voted to set up a moratorium to urge the city council to and the board of supervisors and actually police agencies to stop enforcing laws that criminalize camping for homeless people, at least at night, for a period of time, to get a sense of whether that enforcement is a positive thing, whether it actually drives people away, whether other things can be worked out. This, of course, is nothing that these bodies, our legislative bodies, are going to do without much more pressure. But it is obviously the right thing to do. And it's not so outlandish an idea as you might think, because as an activist who's worked on this issue for 25 years in a rather single-minded way, I find myself spouting the same thing at every show, and people get, I would imagine, get plenty tired of it. You have a sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, makes it illegal to sleep outside after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning. You can't cover up with blankets after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning. And if you have a campsite and try to cover up with protective covering against the rain with a tent, any time of the day or night with the intention of remaining overnight, that's a crime as well. If you try to sleep in your vehicle, even if it's legally parked, that's a crime. So, if you try to sleep in somebody's driveway for more than 3 nights, that's a crime, even with the permission of the person whose driveway you've parked your vehicle and are sleeping in. And the permission of the owner of the property. That's a crime. So, we have a crazy set of laws on the books that essentially were sort of written at the behest of the police department looking for ways to expand their powers, I imagine there's a sincere issue here, to deal with what they consider to be real crime, because police officers, maybe all of us to some extent, have this suspicion of the stranger. And, you know, they want to keep tabs on people, hence NSA surveillance and all that stuff. They don't regard it as a form of inappropriate or dangerous behavior or violation of privacy. Nah, that's not what they regard it as. They regard it as a way of keeping you all safe. See, because they're the daddy and you're the kids. They got to take care of the kids. But, of course, we're not kids, and they're not daddies. And there is such a fundamental misunderstanding there that, and it's ingrained. You grew up, you know, people grow up, I wanted to be a policeman when I was a kid. I mean, I don't even remember that now, but I remember I was mentioned to me that that was one of the things I said that I wanted to do when I was 5 or 6 years old. Because these are people who are regarded as heroes, I see. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I think that one of the main issues there is there are certain kinds of people who like control and power. And this is the mentality of the police force all over the world. It's a certain brand of people. And they do this mainly by collecting information on people, spying, you know, and collecting information legally or illegally. And by having that information, they're able to enhance their control of movements and organizations and individuals. And a lot of it's based on fear, like you pointed out from time to time here on the show. So it's something that people need to be vigilant and fight against from time to time or all the time.
You're going to be able to see this very vividly tomorrow. Tomorrow is the 4th of July, and the whole city will be patrolled by police officers on the lookout for illegal fireworks. And I think all fireworks are illegal in Santa Cruz at this point. Of course, it's the 4th of July, and people are going to be shooting off fireworks. And, you know, they're celebrating freedom, independence, a whole set of constitutional principles, and the right to be free from the thumb and the abuses of King George III and his Hessians and his British troops, just as people across the world, many of them are fighting to be free of American troops and American economic incursion. And people in this country are fighting to be free of the kind of corporate domination that they face. I mean, there's a class war that goes on all over the world, and it is a reality for people because people need to survive. They need to have some basic things that they don't have, and that large corporate interests and governments are stealing from them and continue to steal from them and are armed to crush any revolt. However, here in Santa Cruz, the police, who are acting in a increasingly more militaristic fashion, I saw this the other day when I was I might have been Sunday when I got out of the show. I have a Sunday afternoon show. I went over to Foster's for a hamburger, which is on Laurel Street. There were 4 squad cars, 2 parked in the Foster's parking lot, 2 on the street, blocking the street, I think both Laurel and Cedar Street. And Was this a fire? Some kind of mass shooting? No, it was one person who was a little bit wing nutty, if you forgive the word. You might say disabled. You might say truculent. I was not really get close enough to hear most of the conversation. By the time I got there, the police noting my video camera, perhaps, suddenly began to get into their cars and disappear. But I did know that one officer started, even though this individual was not charged with anything, was essentially berating this person, telling them to keep moving, get out of here, get down the sidewalk, get rolling. He was talking about a person on the public sidewalk who had a perfect right to be there. Now, I talked to the Fosters folks who had called the police after that happened and learned that this was a person who had come the other day and was talking to himself or herself. I was not quite sure what the gender was here. And inside, and making some customers uncomfortable. And so the guy had told this person to leave yesterday. And I think the person had left at some point or other, I think he actually called the police, and the police came, but the person was gone. The person came back today, and this time he called again, and hence we suddenly have four squad cars and four cops, because each cop brought his own squad car. You see this a lot on Pacific Avenue when police gather for any incident. It's a kind of a military-style response, and to me it's not only costly, it not only blocks traffic, it not only gives the wrong lesson in telling people, get yourself a badge and a gun, or follow the orders of guys with badges and guns, or else, but it also establishes a kind of, it establishes a kind of fear. That you better not sit down next to that building, or there'll be four cops, or six, or eight, or ten. I mean, there are, and I'm not just exaggerating. That doesn't often happen. Ten, but four is quite frequent. Three or four will show up. We had five cops watching our protest in February from across the street, and they didn't brutalize us. But it is repressive. It is intimidating, and it is. It tends to make people avoid the kind of First Amendment activity that I think they should actually be doing more of. And so that's my personal feeling, but it doesn't increase safety at all. It increases the sense of fear on the streets. And what's your thought on that, Mike? Looks like you're...
It goes back to what I was saying, this control thing, and fear is another means of control. Instilling fear in people is a way of exercising their control, their ego, their whatever, their sense of duty, I suppose, warp sense of duty, warp sense.
See, I don't think it comes from we've had this kind of discussion before. I don't think it comes necessarily from a desire to control in some individual way. I think this is an institutional practice that has become more and more prevalent. A kind of a military, paramilitary, a way of addressing social concerns. And the idea is, yes, it is control, but they claim, and I imagine you've talked to police officers, they will tell you they are doing it for a beneficent and beneficial purpose. They want to make sure that the crime rate drops. They want people to even be afraid of even thinking of stealing that candy bar. Yeah, they want people to essentially be frightened into behaving properly. Or if you want to look at it in a more positive way, they want other people to feel more secure that they won't have that panhandler say, "You fucker, you don't give me a quarter, you're a bastard," and spit on the sidewalk. Because that makes it unpleasant for them to be downtown spending $5 on a latte and $95 on a dress and ignoring the beggar on the street who is poor. As I do, by the way, as well. I'm not saying I'm immune from this.
No, but I've seen you give money to these people quite often, so it's not quite true.
Sometimes.
Yeah, but the thing is, there's no doubt about it, we are increasingly manifesting a police state. And these are symptoms of a police state where the police and the people in power have more control over people. We see it in the third world countries in a blatant form. What's the answer?
Well, I know that you'll be able to see the whole process tomorrow, for sure. Go to the beaches, and you'll find yourself being probably searched at checkpoints. There'll be angry people who will not like that, will tell you, this is the 4th of July, get your hands off me. You will see people being tased and possibly clubbed or certainly, you know, manhandled. I'm not going to say it's going to happen that much, but the threat is there and growing, and it has been happening with some regularity on the 4th of July. And also, at the same time, the laws are being expanded to facilitate this. So, for instance, last year, while there was a triple fine zone, I think, at the beach, I'm not entirely sure about this. I think there was a triple fine zone for things like fireworks, parking violations, open container, drunk in public, graffiti, or I guess called graffiti, as though these were major crimes that had to be somehow especially militantly watched out for. I mean, yeah, drunk in public, it's a fucking holiday, man. You're going to find people who are drunk in public. The idea that somehow this is something you've got to stamp out is abusive. People celebrate in this country and in others. I don't, but others do, by drinking. And other people celebrate with other kinds of intoxicants. And, you know, that's just how it is. And, in fact, it's a positive thing for people to celebrate. That's why you have holidays for people to celebrate. Fireworks, they're driving people from the beaches into the neighborhoods in a drought. It is ridiculous. I mean, you know, it makes you kind of shake your head and rue it. Anyway, I say take a look at it tomorrow. And see what you see. And maybe we'll have some reports. I was actually thinking of doing a cop watch myself downtown tomorrow, although the beaches are really where it's all going to be. And we have more. One thing on that is to be said is we have more and more video that people carry, personal video, in those cell phones, that may, I'm hoping it will deter police behavior, but frankly, I don't know that it necessarily does. It may provide more documentation of it, but.
One point is I want to make there is I go down to the beach every few days, and I go there to relax, watch the birds, see the waves come and go, and inhale the nice air at the ocean. But and this is not the 4th of July. This is like every other day. You're sitting there relaxing, and the next thing is the police are coming up and down the beach in. These kind of larger than those four-wheel drives, if you understand what I'm saying.
Trucks, little trucks.
Little trucks, yes, yes. And this is intimidating. People don't want the police right on top of them when they're out down there to relax and release the stress of life. It's just totally ridiculous. I mean, if they want to set up... I've never seen any particular incidents during the day. This is during the day. I never seen any particular incidents happen there, but if they want to stay in a neighborhood somewhere, fine, but not drive up and down the beach, you know, showing off their power, their little trucks, and their stupidity, and their stupid consciousness, if I can say that word, because quite a few police in my experience, and these are only traffic violations, are stupid. Thick, ignorant people. Not them all, of course. There's some very nice, balanced people. But more than the share I want to know about, that's my experience over the years.
Well, let's turn now to some more interviews from the street. And again, your experience out there, folks. I guess tonight there's also an Old Glory flag burning on the beach that's happening today. It's either today or tomorrow. Brent Adams does this every year, where he essentially, as a sort of a symbolic and abstract exercise in the rights in America, saying, look how free we are, we can burn our own flag, and that means, you know, we can be happy how free we are. Just don't bring any fireworks to the beach. Just don't try to open a beer at the beach. Just don't do any of these things. I guess that's freedom. But, you know, it's something he does, and, you know, and in a sense, it's a commendable and it's a sort of an interesting exercise. I've always kind of criticized it in some way by saying, look, burning a flag in other countries, burning a U.S. flag, what it really means is it means that U.S. get out. It's a very simple message. And to burn a flag in this country when you don't mean that as some sort of symbolic exercises, it's sort of like you are trying to cover both sides of the political spectrum. I mean, maybe you might call it a different kind of message. I see it akin to Steve Plaich's enabling of Take Back Santa Cruz trolls on his Facebook page. Although it has to be said, it is his Facebook page, and that's sort of what it is. By the way, I want to thank the people who wrote in to specify instances of what they consider to be bullying by other people who are posting on Steve Plaich's Facebook page, where Steve was sort of taking a benevolent attitude toward those on the right, but not so much to those who are more strident voices on the left. And yes, to be said, it is Plaich's Facebook page, so that's true. We're not talking about a public website or, you know, some sort of libertarian area where everybody has, you know, equal rights. You can start your own website. You can start your own Facebook page. But it does go to the ideology and the priorities of Steve. And the reason it's important that I mentioned Steve Plaich is he's running for city council, and he's the only city council member that a lot of the listeners to this show would ever even consider voting for, because he not only favors ending the sleeping ban, he was the individual at this ACLU meeting on Monday who brought the resolution up that won 5-3. Let's hear some more from the street before I take up all the time with my jabber. 427-3772, and you can jabber too.
And we should also add, we have been talking with
Cole Hook.
Thank you, Cole. So Food Not Bombs not only has a sign posted to the tree and three different tables, actually four of different lengths, and a kind of an L-shaped...
This is a description of Food Not Bombs' Saturday meal, last Saturday actually, I think it was the 29th of June, or thereabouts, maybe the 28th.
Display. They also have a placard, Food Not Bombs today, veggies, veggies, veggies. And folks there are several women on the dishwashing squad, the rinse, wash, wash, rinse, and rinse. And here we have some guys who are cleaning out the pots.
And all this is happening right across from the town clock, right next to the main post office. You can actually see it live and help, and actually join in and help. It happens between 4 and 6 every Saturday and Sunday at that location, and they serve a vegan or vegetarian food.
Well, one guy is scraping out the pots. And the birds are circling for the leftovers and coming in to do a little pecking. We're talking with
Jerry Hudson.
And Jerry, what's cooking?
Police are harassing the homeless, trying to eradicate the homeless in Santa Cruz because they don't want the homeless people here anymore. They have no compassion, no love. All they want to do is demean and denigrate the individuals to make them leave. However, I'm their social conscience, and I'm going to stay.
What experiences have you had lately that you can tell us about?
Oh, for instance, they busted people for, like, petty stuff, like an open container, anything like that. Anything that they can think of so they can get them fined.
What have you seen in the last week?
Well, I've seen them beat up a guy.
Tell me about that.
Okay, well, he didn't do anything.
Where was this?
They're over there by CVS.
Uh-huh.
And they just beat this guy up for nothing. Nothing. And it was like, I couldn't even believe it. Because
what time of day?
It was about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night.
And were you close? Were you far away?
I was like 15 feet away.
And how did you happen to notice this?
I was coming out of the CVS store.
And what did you see?
Wow. This guy was just walking, and they just swooped on him and just No warrant, no nothing. They just took him down.
And was he, this is on CVS's property?
Yes, it was.
And did you hear any conversation?
No, I did not.
What did the guy look like?
He was a Caucasian, had long hair, a beard. Actually, he was pretty clean.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't dirty. But so I guess somebody made a report on him that was false because, but they dropped him to the ground.
How many police were involved?
Thank you for that.
Actually, there was two women officers and three male officers. And the women officers are the one that escalated the incident.
And how did they escalate it?
Because they started talking smack to the guy, and he responded. And when he responded to him, the male officers attacked him.
What exactly did the female officers say to him?
I didn't get the exact conversation, but it was derogatory. So
what was the outcome of all this?
Well, he went to jail.
Hung there for years.
How many people observed this?
Probably about 25.
And did anybody comment?
No.
Did you comment?
I commented.
What did you say?
I said, "What is this? Are we in Nazi Germany?"
And to which they replied, "Ein, ein!"
Pretty much.
See, you're not supposed to fear.
Pretty much.
Just not doing your bit for
it. Ein Reich, ein Führer.
Ein Volk, yeah.
Ah.
Well, we've been talking to that man observing the scene. Your name again is?
Jerry.
Hudson. Thanks, Jerry. Should be on free radio Thursday evening. And so I'm out here at the Red Church. It's about 5 to 6 on June 30th, and I'm talking with
Mr. J.
And Mr. J, you've expressed some concerns about Take Back Santa Cruz.
Yes, I've had experience with them, and there's an old saying, you know, you corner a lion, it's going to explode back at you, and you really can't do that to people, no matter who or how they are, and it can get out of control. There's a fine line of danger and peace there, and it can get really scary.
What's happened to you in the last couple of weeks that has involved Take Back Santa Cruz, or during any particular things you remember?
I've had my photos taken. I've had people follow me with cell phones, follow me with cars. I know this for a fact, and it goes way farther than me, because if I felt this feeling, it could go back to I don't want to say the officers' names, but
you can if you wish.
Well, it could go back to cornering the person that Pat made, Officer Baker pass away. It could go back that far if you want to dig that far. But I would think it's a hidden thing there. And there's a whole bunch that's scary here. There's a fine line between pushing.
What specifically happened? Do you think that anything happened recently, like in the last week or two?
No, it's been about 2 months. Mm-hmm. I actually called 911 and got in an argument with two operators that served no help. I fired one over the phone. He got so embarrassed over the phone that he gave me the number I was after. It was that was the scariest moment.
Why did you call 911?
Because I had a black and white Santa Cruz police officer by the truck I was staying in, and I called I called their office to see if they were dispatched there, and they wasn't. So
it was the officer's own judgment to come and...
Well, he wouldn't even talk to me. He wouldn't get out of his car. He wouldn't talk to me. He wouldn't... Nothing. And this is really strange. I ran my battery dead, blowing my horn and flashing my lights. I ran my battery dead on SoCal Avenue.
And did you call because of a car problem, or did you call because...
I called because...
what I called for was I wanted a different officer from a different dispatch to be there, because since this officer wasn't dispatched, why was he there? And why didn't he just peck on my window and say, hey, what's up? And he would have...
You wanted help from him, but he wasn't giving it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And how does this... Do you think this is in any way related to Take Back Santa Cruz? Or?
Of course it is.
And how so?
Well, they... I'm a so-called tweaker, and I'm pretty much known for running the streets, and I was singled out and played with, you know.
Are you facing any court situation?
No, absolutely not.
That's good.
Well, I take that back. A minor incident, but they didn't. So that has nothing to do with that. But
Want something you need for dinner?
No.
3 inches.
I can really dig deep into this, and I'm just kind of.
Well, let's leave it here for the moment.
Okay.
But thank you. We've been talking with
Mr. J.
Thanks, Mr. J. Joel Miller is speaking.
And he's going to tell a story. And I think it's an Independence Day story, because in the Bible, freedom and independence is almost always followed with the word from. Freedom, independence from fear. Freedom, independence from death. Freedom, independence from oppression. Freedom, independence from persecution. And what he found in coming here was a freedom to give his life to service.
Amen.
To help people find more freedom in their life. So you're all invited to that, as you are every Sunday, but I thought you might like to know it. And we actually saw two new volunteers today. One is another student from UCSC. Marina, is she in there? Andrea's back. And then I saw Mary.
And this is Father Joel Miller, who's actually sort of introducing the staff as feeding homeless people. Quite a large crowd on the last day of the month.
So we're talking with Johnson. And Johnson, you heard me give this little speech about coming to the ACLU meeting, but you yourself have had an encounter with the police
many times.
And right before Mr. Johnson's account here, I spoke to the group of people, and I invited them to go to the ACLU meeting where Steve Plage had promised he was going to bring up an issue for a vote, and he did, which has to do with the moratorium on the sleeping ban and camping ordinances, which I mentioned earlier in the show. And I encourage people to come and speak out what's been happening to them, how their property has been taken, if it has, the way they've been treated, how they've been woken up in the middle of the night, whether they've been given a safe place to go, whether they've been afforded their rights in terms of being left alone and being treated with dignity and respect during the day and so forth. And I frankly didn't expect many people to go at all. But here are some of the accounts that I got as I went about after I'd spoken.
What happened recently?
I got a dog leash ticket. The leash was 2 feet from my dog, and I get a ticket, and they know I can't pay because I'm on the streets, but there's volleyball players, there are nurses, doctors, whatever, lawyers from Santa Cruz, and their dog's sitting right next to the volleyball court, and the cops will not walk on the beach and give them a ticket, but they got to give me a ticket. And these people get paid the fine, and I can't.
When did this happen?
About a week and a half ago, and today is the 30th of June.
Particular officers involved?
Not Romero, the lady one, the blue shirt. Not Romero, the other one. Gosh, I can't think of her name.
Was he light blue?
Yeah, light blue shirt.
CSO Wilson?
No. Not Romero. What the heck's her name? I can't think of her name, but everybody knows her.
And so what's been your experience with these tickets in the past? Have you paid them? Have they got been a consequence of them?
They're infractions, the little ones. I guess they go to my credit or whatever, but I know they're going to build up and eventually turn to a warrant. I'll probably get arrested, but they threatened to take my dog. They give me a 24-hour kick off the beach. I couldn't go to the concert, the free concert in the boardwalk, and when I went to go to the concert, I was ready to go. I had four six PDs on me and four boardwalk securities on me telling me to leave, or if they see me again, me and my dog are going to jail, and I wasn't even intoxicated, no way or no form. They're just being very cruel to me.
Name of your dog?
Maggie May.
Well, I take Maggie May's paw print if I could, but unfortunately...
She's well known in this town from Santa Cruz PD.
And we've been talking with?
David Johnson.
Well done, man.
And there again, we hear this man's account and then the previous account of a very massive overreaction by police. Now, it's possible our folks, these accounts are exaggerated, but they're pretty specific. So, you have to have your, make your own judgment. And my own experience, again, as I said, as frequently as 3 days ago, was to see overkill. And that's almost always the case when an officer is called to a scene these days. And part of that is because they're being funded for this. The Take Back Santa Cruz mentality, the Terrazas Robinson City Council, which is now in power, and that includes Lane and Posner, who have never called for a cutback in any kind of police funding, and never will, I suspect. If police officers are funded, they're going to be sent out. Hey, why not? Of course, the question is this a good use of taxpayer money, A? B, what's happening with other crime? And then C, what's the impact of this on how people feel about being able to be in public spaces without being menaced, not by criminals, but by the possibility of being humiliated by police officers or... facing threats, not necessarily explicit threats, not necessarily open threats, but the unspoken threat of a police officer nearby looking at you and thinking you violated some ordinance or code, particularly if you're a poor person, particularly if you're a homeless person. Let's hear some more from the Red Church. One thing, before I go back to that, infraction citations, which is what these are about, the beach, the dog ticket, I guess there was the previous person. Most of these are really petty infractions, but new laws have been passed by the city council and supported by the current liberals on city council that state if you get three infraction tickets, every subsequent ticket will be, whatever the infraction, a misdemeanor. And also, if you get three infraction tickets, they can immediately charge you with a misdemeanor for just having gotten three infraction tickets. Most of the ordinances that are in the city code state, if you do it once, it's an infraction. If you do it a second time within the particular infraction, again, whether it's sleeping or sitting next to a building or spare changing in the wrong location, whatever... At night, for instance, it's illegal to hold up a sign at night that says spare change, ? Then if you do it a second time within a certain period of time, I think it's 6 months, some cases it's a month, then that's a misdemeanor. But you have to do the same crime again. So it makes a certain amount of sense. This new law passed in 2010, relatively new, and is being used against people, is if you do any infractions... And they total three, then all infractions after that infraction for the next year become misdemeanors. No one's challenged this law. It sounds unconstitutional as they come to me, but again, I'm not I don't pretend to have researched the issue or to be a legal expert. So the man who says, "Well, I'm afraid it might affect his credit. They might come and try to give him issue a warrant for him." It's not just a warrant they'd be issued. It used to be, you would be charged with failure to appear if you didn't go and deal with your infraction ticket. But so many people who are homeless didn't fail to appear because, you give me a ticket for sleeping, I'll fail to appear. I'm sorry, I got to sleep the next night, and I'm busy running around looking for a place to stash my stuff during the day. I have no time to go to court and go through all their bullshit. I have to stand in line, I have to deal with getting this and that, if you get medical treatments, all kinds of things that ordinary people who have houses take for granted. Do you want to say something about that?
They also don't... They're not cognizant of what day it is. Often, one day is the same as the next, and sometimes these people. They just don't know what day. Or
by
day.
These people, you mean homeless people like yourself, Dr. O'Grady? Is that who you're talking about,
I'm
perhaps?
So, yes.
Indeed. No, I mean, quite right. But I mean, but also, there are many things people have to do. If they don't have transportation, or if they're disabled in some way, it's a real burden. So, all of these laws are really designed to, they're a way of the middle class people of this mindset, this punitive mindset, saying, get out of here. We don't want you around here unless you can follow some very strict guidelines. We will be compassion free or smartly compassionate, or we're not going to enable you anymore. Of course, it's when you lose your house, when you lose, you know, your vehicle, when you lose your ability to work, when the health bills eat you up, and they like to call that bad choices these days. It's not a question of you're being enabling people. It's a question of simply acknowledging the realities of the conditions people face, and trying to criminalize them. Because, you know, they're blocking your view is disgusting, frankly, and something that HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, is militantly against. In fact, we have learned, and I'll just throw this one in, that the Downtown Accountability Project, which is actually the Downtowners Against the Poor Project, because that's really what it stands for, the DAP Project, in my view, which is supposed to... under the cover of giving people treatment and giving people housing, but there's no funding for the housing and very little for the treatment in terms of what they claim they want to do, they're going to remove chronic offenders from the downtown. I put out Public Records Act requests to Susan O'Hara, Jeff Rozell. I asked Mike Posner, I think, about this too. I'm not sure if I've been asking him a lot of things, maybe not about that thing. But Steve Plaich, I asked him about it. I asked Ron Pomerantz about it. Plaich ran a TV community TV show that actually had these Downtown Accountability Project people on it. And you can actually see it on his website, Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz. And it's a bunch of gobbledygook, really. It doesn't have a lot of useful information about how much the program costs, how many people it will serve, what actual services they will receive, what will be the consequences of if they don't complete their program successfully, what are the criteria being used to suggest someone is a chronic offender, what are the chronic offenses, in order to make sure that we're not just dealing with homeless people. I asked Plaich to, you know, find out, because he's... buddies with these folks, arranges them for TV shows, what the actual the chronic offenses were, and who show us the list of the 100 chronic offenders, and also show us the addresses of the 100 chronic offenders. Are they largely homeless? Are they not? And so forth. Steve was too busy to be bothered by this, of course. But he didn't mind putting out a lot of propaganda that supported this program. I both resent it and I find I'm kind of sorry about it. We have a different difference of position there. But let's turn back to some of these chronic offenders who gather at the church to fuel up before going out to engage in more criminal sleep crimes and so forth. Though I have to admit, full disclosure, the Downtown Accountability Project bosses, specifically Jeff Rozell of the District Attorney's Office, insists sleeping is not one of the crimes that the chronic offenders are being adjudged chronic offenders for.
Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
So we're talking with... Anonymous, perhaps?
Anonymous.
And what's your concern, Anonymous?
Well, I think camping out should not be illegal. And sleeping in your car, look at the economy. People are losing their jobs. And it should not be against the law. Somebody that just lost everything to sleep in their car somewhere, they have nowhere to go. What are they supposed to do?
Have you suffered any discrimination or tickets because of this?
Oh, yes. A couple weeks ago, I was woke up by a sheriff at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Where were you, if you want to say?
By De La Vega Park.
And what did the sheriff tell you?
He told me I had to move.
Yeah. Did he give you a citation or just wake you?
No, he did not. He just said I had to move. He was glad I was alive, he said.
But it still didn't, imagine it didn't feel too good.
No. Being woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
And how frequently has this happened to you?
Well,
once in the past couple of weeks.
And how long have you been outside now?
I've just been homeless for the past couple of weeks, and I've been homeless before for many years, but I was taking care of someone's house.
Hey, get a haircut, you hippie.
And I got locked out of that, and I was all of a sudden homeless again, and it's been real drama.
Any other instances of drama you wanted to comment on?
Not at this moment.
And we've been talking with an anonymous man.
Pardon me?
You're the anonymous man.
That's me.
Thank you.
That's okay. No, no.
When the man who's passing a petition around, what's your name, sir?
I'm sort of wondering what is important about my name when I'm fucking fainting.
They're keeping a low profile?
Yeah, I'm passing the petition around. It's great to get some people to get signatures. You know, everybody's got their own time zones and so forth, so that they can read it or not read it. But if you just pass it around lightly, hey, you know, they're getting good response. It's a good feeling. Thank you, Robert. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
And the petition he was circulating read as follows: Human rights for homeless people. For those living outside in Santa Cruz, human rights abuses happen daily. These include the laws criminalizing outdoor and vehicular sleep for homeless people at night, bans and severe restrictions on public space use during the day, and seizure and destruction of homeless survival gear. Police and businesses have a double standard when it comes to homeless folks. Social service agencies provide little protection. We, the undersigned, ask our local American Civil Liberties Union to publicly denounce these abuses. We urge them to break their long silence. This petition received about 30 or more signatures. We haven't really quite counted them. I've passed them on to, Punchback Pat Colby is looking over them. Anyway, this petition was being circulated as well as a small flyer which invited people to come to the ACLU meeting that was starting at 7 o'clock at the end of this Red Church meal, about three blocks away at the Loudon Nelson Center, where it usually does every month, the board of directors of the generally do-nothing local ACLU.
All right, we have a report from...
My name is Bob Noxious.
And Bob, you're pausing from your bagel and your macaroni and whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, there's cream cheese on the bagel. That's a really bad thing. Cream cheese is really bad for you. It's like the worst of the worst of the worst. Cholesterol and everything.
Did something happen to you yesterday?
Yes, actually something did. Here, I'll tell you what happened. I've been living like Peter Pan on steroids with a pet crane 4 feet high. Her name is Bizquick, in a cave, just living just the life, you know, the full-on dream for 8 years now. And I'll be goddamned if the city didn't come in yesterday and take the whole fucking cave in its entirety, everything, and took the trash.
Which was, at least they took the trash.
At least they took the trash. Now, fortunately, because I'm a pirate and memory is like the third thing to go on a pirate, so ask what the first and second, you're supposed to ask what the first and second thing are.
And what's the second and the first thing? Yeah, I'm asked to ask.
I can't remember.
We have this kind of pirate humor which requires walking the plank.
That's right. But just so you know, pirate's favorite letter isn't R, it's the C. At any rate, like a pirate, I buried the things I really cared about. Did I just say carried about? Oh my goodness. Is that cared about? I said carried about. That's carried.
But what of yours, what was taken by the police?
They took everything. The tent. It was the city. Yeah, I guess a disgruntled homeowner saw it and saw that I had yet a better view than them and didn't pay any taxes and just wasn't going to have it.
Did you get a receipt for your property?
No. Matter of fact, I didn't get anything. But bottom line is I was able to save the things I owned by burying all my stuff in the clean, pristine sand that is there at the cave where I live.
So are you telling me that the city stole your property without a receipt?
Well, yeah, of course. They do that to everybody's property.
So have you tried to reclaim it at all? Has that ever happened? Have you gone back and gotten the property they've taken?
I have, but it's only been in regards to the bike lockers. And I was actually, after doing research for 6 months, and I'm serious.
Remember, we talked about this.
That's right.
But did you anticipate going and getting the property back that they took from the cave?
Negative. I put it behind me. Again, being a pirate, memory is the third thing letting it go, so it doesn't bother me anymore.
Fair enough. We've been talking with
Bob Noxious.
Anything else, Bob?
That's about it. Other than that, thanks for listening.
And thanks for speaking. Well, let me ask this man who just got a ticket. Thank you. It's Matt, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just got a ticket the other night. I was over by the bridge over here by the courthouse. I got a ticket.
What were you? Were you blowing up the train? What were you doing?
No, I was asleep and snoring away, and they woke me up and said,
"Who woke you up?"
A cop woke me up and said I had to.
Give you a legal place to go, perhaps?
No, he just said this is one of the places that we patrol, so he gave me a ticket.
Really? Did he say there were places they didn't patrol you could go to?
No, he never told me anywhere I could go that I wouldn't get a ticket.
And have you gotten tickets before?
No, I think I have got a few, but I haven't paid any of them yet. No warrants came up, luckily.
And what time of night was it?
This was about 3 in the morning when they got me.
And were you alone or in company?
I was alone. I was alone, sleeping, not bothering nobody.
Were you very visible or were you kind of concealed?
I was about halfway in between.
And was how many police were involved?
Just one. Yep. And then he got a call and took off real quick after I got the ticket.
So is that cheap? Oh, are you filled?
I got some more.
Listen to, go to YouTube and listen to Loose Change on YouTube. That's L-O-O-S-E, Change, C-H-A-N-G-E. And then you know the
truth. Now they know.
Now they know.
Thank you, Ben. So we're talking with
Cecilia.
And Cecilia, you say that, I guess you were telling me that when you sleep in the park, you're a little apprehensive, so you get up early. Is that what you were saying?
Yes, I'm a little apprehensive about where I sleep because I'm afraid to sleep too far out in the hills or off out of the town limits because I'm afraid of something happening to me or somebody not being able to help me.
And how long have you been outside?
I've been outside for a little over 10 years. Over 10 years.
And how have you fared? You're an attractive woman. Are you usually alone or are you with someone?
I'm usually on my own. I'm a single person, and I'm here in the
defend yourself pretty well.
Yeah, for the most part, I try to. Disabled, and I'm on a social security disability, but it's hard a little bit finding housing, and so it's been tough, and I've had a few tickets, but I'm not sure quite of the sleeping mannerisms, if you can be in a sleeping bag like this, what the law is so far.
We can talk about that later.
Homelessness, yeah.
I'll be at this meeting at the ACLU at 7 o'clock over at Loudoun Nelson if you want to come.
Okay, that'd be great, because I've paid some fines here in the past, and I still have some fines I need to pay on a few tickets, and with the bathrooms being closed, some of the public bathrooms, and there not being enough access, there's quite a bit of homelessness here in the community, so it's been tough. So I'm going to go over at 7 o'clock over at the Loudoun Nelson Center so I can take part.
And thank you for talking to us. And we've been talking with?
Cecilia.
Thanks, Cecilia.
All right.
So we're talking with?
Shelley.
Shelley, you just signed this Human Rights for Homeless People petition. Why was that?
Because I, as an advocate and for victims, I feel that now that I'm homeless and I understand that our needs and necessities aren't met. And we all have a right to choose to sleep outside. And some of us don't want to go inside. But yet we still have amenities and necessities that we need that should be provided. You know, and just I think the police and the rangers and everybody kind of looks down upon us and don't realize that they're probably one check away from being us. And that if they would want compassion and understanding if they were in our shoes, and God forbid that they ever are, you know, but that we educate. Education and fear the unknown, and I think that that has a lot to do with it.
How long have you been outside yourself?
5 months.
And how does it feel as a woman to be outside? Are you generally alone with other people?
I have to say that this is the first time in my life that I have ever been on the streets, 42 years old, and I was married for 20 years, kept in a little box, so life hit me real hard when I came out here, and I feared, and my main priority is safety, and I have to say I've met some malice-intentful people, but I've also met some wonderful people, and that the human and spirit of the light out here. I think that being a woman, you're even more cautious. You have to know your surroundings, and you have to know yourself. And the first thought wrong, that's what I've learned, is, you know, and I still trust people, and until proven wrong, but that's my nature, the mandate, that's the moral and ethical foundation of my character.
You seem pretty positive.
Yeah, and I am. I have found myself out here, and I wouldn't change a day of my life. I really wouldn't.
Cool. Well, tell the folks at the ACLU what's been happening to you and why you think the law needs to be changed and why they need to support changes.
I think that the first thing that they need to do is...
You can tell them yourself if you show up at 7.
At 7, yeah, I hope to. But the first thing that needs to be changed is that that drug abuse and homeless are in the same sentence. That, you know, that they think that everybody out here is a drug addict and that the drug, you know, all the homeless are responsible for, you know, the points and the dirty...
Needles.
That's right. And as a mother, I have to say, and as a person, that if you're going to do drugs, that's your choice, but you have to be a responsible drug user. And it doesn't take but 2 seconds, because you're putting everybody's life in danger. And if you are that callous and malice and have no conscience about it when you throw that on the ground, then, you know, then God help you.
It would also be nice if we had some responsible community activists who are ranting and raving about needle hysteria irresponsibly, spreading fear instead of real good information about what's going on out there, exaggerating by factors of 10, 100, and 1,000 the dangers involved, when in fact there are no cases that I've ever heard of anyone ever getting an HIV from a needle discarded in the wilds outside. I continue to repeat this, and I did this last show when we had a caller called in who was concerned about the issue and wanted to suggest it was a major problem. And I said, no, I don't think it's that much more significant a problem than it ever was. And obviously the real solution to the problem is better needle exchange, not no needle exchange, which is the real agenda of many of these folks. The real agenda is to shut down needle exchanges based on the fallacious and wrong-headed notion that prohibition is the way to go. They simply didn't learn anything by reading their history books from the 20s on alcohol prohibition, and they want to do it here again. Or just watching what's been happening over the last 100 years around drug war prohibition. So, yeah, responsibility. I think the people who are comfortably sitting in their homes ranting propaganda against homeless people outside around these issues definitely need to be more responsible. No question.
Because, you know, it's just wrong. But I think that every article I read in the paper,
wrong to smear homeless people or even drug users as irresponsible. We don't know where the needles are necessarily coming from.
You know, and not all homeless people are drug addicts, and not all drug addicts are homeless. You know, I mean, and so they have to stop stereotyping that, and that's the first thing they need to do. And not all homeless people are mean. They're not, you know, scary. They're not going to hurt you. You know, I mean, all these character media has fed us through our, you know, down our throats is wrong. And so that's the first thing that needs to change.
We've been talking with?
Shelley.
Thanks, Shelley. Usual comment is?
Don't be a sheep.
There you go. Don't be sheepish about it either. So, Tim, there is a meeting of the ACLU tonight at 7 o'clock. In case you want to go, any comments?
No, thanks.
All righty. Thank you. A report from a house owner. What's your name? An anonymous report. Anything that you want to tell us?
Thank you.
El Centro Apartments
right. Is
full of crazy people.
Has that changed recently? Gotten worse? Gotten better?
I've only been there a short time. And it is so incredibly, unbelievably nuts.
And
that I would rather eat dinner here than try to cook dinner in my own communal kitchen and have any of those people say anything to me.
Is there any kind of grievance process you have for changing this?
I don't know. I don't own a gun.
Ooh. All right. Well, listen, good luck.
Thank you.
So we're out here talking with an observer. And what have you observed out there with surfers and tourists?
I observed three surfers chasing a tourist around, threatening to shoot him for his parking spot and threatening to beat him up. just three surfers just running around the parking lot chasing this guy around, threatening him and threatening other people that's in the parking lot too.
They immediately arrived and confiscated the surfers' surfboards?
No, someone parked in a parking spot and they got pissed off about it, and then whenever that person left, they targeted on some people that had out-of-state license plates.
I see. They want and outsiders in our town.
And pulled the, we're the Santa Cruz local surfers, you know, local boys, and we don't take kindly to you out-of-staters being around here taking our spots.
I see. So one of those gangs of armed surfboarders were, should we say, causing trouble?
Oh, yeah. They definitely were.
What did the police do about this?
Nothing.
Were they aware of the situation?
I don't think so.
Did you stand up and say, "Hold it, you surfer guys"?
Somewhat.
Really?
Told them to knock it off, you know, back the fuck off and leave the guy alone.
To which they responded,
"Fuck off."
And what happened to the guy? Did he slip through the net?
Yeah, someone else saw what was going on and stepped in and said, "Hey, what you doing?"
And which the surfers... How many surfers were there?
There were three.
And were they blonde, blue-eyed, and attractive surfers? Did you want to date one?
No.
Probably not.
I'm not into studs. And that's what I see them being. Considering what I consider the word stud to stand for.
Well, we will leave this interesting bit of information. Anything you want to add on this?
No, that's about it.
And when did all this happen?
Yesterday.
About what time?
About 1 o'clock.
And where?
Up on Westcliff.
And you, how close were you to the whole incident?
I was about 50 feet away from it.
Have you suffered harassment up on Westcliff yourself or not?
No.
So you're, are you friends with any of the surfers?
No, I'm not.
But they haven't bothered to single you out?
No.
Well, because you haven't stolen their parking places, eh?
I don't drive, so no.
There you go. See, now there you are, safer not to drive. We've been talking with an anonymous person who, just given us the account you've heard. Thank you.
Thank you.
The ACLU meeting here. It's about 7 o'clock.
And this is the account of the ACLU meeting that I was supposed to begin an hour ago. My apologies to those who tuned in and found us talking about the other issues like militarization of the police in Santa Cruz. But let's hear some of this. I don't think we're going to have time to play it all. Some of it's rather dramatic. And let's hear it. This has happened in room 3 of the Loudon Nelson Center on Monday night, the 29th of June, I believe.
There are 3, 6, 7 members of the public and currently 5 ACLU members, including Peter Gelblum, Ron Pomerantz, Jay Campbell, I'm reading that's Cam Campbell, and Steve Plage, as well as... hey, Alicia.
And there turned out eventually to be 15 people in the room, 15 people who were visitors from the public, 12 of whom who were homeless, and I believe it was 8 members of the ACLU board. So it was quite a full room.
Take that 8 members of the public. About 9 members of the public. Could be only 7 members of the public. 8 counting me. We have 6 members of the ACLU now, including Mithril, which just arrived. And we have 2 more members of the public for Ken. Yeah, grab a chair. If you can't find a chair, I'll find you a chair.
Somebody want to say something?
So I can speak myself. I'm here. I think most of these folks are here hoping to contribute to, if not at least, or at least to listen to your.
Okay.
You like salsa music?
I do. I love it.
Yeah, I understand. Most of the folks are here, I think, because they've heard from Steve, and I think Dan also mentioned that there was going to be the sleeping ban repeal discussion on your agenda. And well, I know you've had the predilection of closing these meetings. I was going to suggest that since so many people are here, it might be appropriate for you to keep them open, at least for that one agenda item. Folks, I think, want to speak particularly to that issue. And they may also have some other things to say, too.
And this appeal that I made to the chair, Peter Gelblum, was because in the past, actually at his own initiative, he has cleared the room of people, even though nobody was doing anything, simply almost as a bureaucratic automatic activity, or maybe because he was afraid the sleeping ban issue was going to come up. There was a previous meeting where homeless people did come, not in the numbers they came at this last Monday meeting, but in five or six of them. And he, there was also other members waiting for a discussion of immigrant rights, and he kept them all waiting in the hallway. As though somehow there was some significant secretive issues to be discussed. Since then, Steve Plages, who said nothing when this happened to his discredit, then later brought up a resolution to make it the meetings open to the public. He failed to get any votes other than his own. I don't think he lobbied too hard for that one. And at this meeting, we were able to get, probably because of the numbers of people in the room, the ACLU to not attempt, Gelblum specifically, the chair, not to attempt to evict people.
I have a petition for the ACLU, which is signed by, 30 or 40 people, asking that for those living outside in Santa Cruz, human rights abuses happen daily. These include laws criminalizing outdoor and vehicular sleep for homeless people at night, bans and severe restrictions on public spaces use during the day, and seizure and destruction of homeless survival gear. Police and homeless have a double standard. Police and businesses have a double standard when it comes to homeless folks. Social service agencies provide little protection, and this petition asks the ACLU to publicly denounce these abuses. We urge them to break their long silence. We urge you to break your long silence. And specifically, this doesn't ask for legal help. It just asks for statements of policy, which I've, of course, been requesting from this board for decades and not getting it. So I think these folks might want to tell you their experiences, and I would encourage you to give them time to do that.
You're going to give us
I do. I'm going to first make copies of it, and then I'll pass it on to you.
Well, since we don't have the form, maybe that's going to be official business. I don't have any problem with moving that item up on the agenda. Did you ask a problem with that?
I'm going to even describe what the item is, because it's on your agenda already.
Steve?
Yeah.
Go for it.
I am.
Steve has asked that we discuss tonight this statement of principle. The Santa Cruz County Chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union supports in principle a limited time moratorium on enforcement of camping ban laws and ordinances within the city and county of Santa Cruz on the grounds that such laws and ordinances selectively criminalize the homeless community and serve no important public policy. While the chapter is mindful that such a moratorium raises practical problems within the community at large, we believe that the benefits of such an approach in terms of the opportunity for civic leaders, policymakers, and stakeholders, I might, to reassess the efficacy of these laws and ordinances outweighs any temporary adverse impact. So that's the principle. Steve, did you want to say something about it?
No, except to say that I do believe that the sleeping ban can be criminalized homeless people selectively. And I do not think, as a matter of law, that they serve any important public policy. Public policies that we would be speaking about would generally be the policies of protecting public safety, public health, or public order. I don't think that these laws speak to any of those protections necessarily. So I feel that they're not serving in a constitutional sense. If you're looking at a constitutional argument, they don't serve in a constitutional sense any important public policy. So for the city of Santa Cruz, I believe it's time to set these laws aside, to take a look at their impact on cost, on the homeless community, on the community at large, and see whether or not they are really necessary to maintain any of the public interest that have been stated about public safety, public health, public order.
Any of our guests want to weigh in?
Yeah.
Did you tell me your name?
Oh, Jeff Freeman. I always like to look at both sides of the picture, so I see why the ordinances are in place.
Jeff is a member of the public who was at the Penn University, and he saw the petition being circulated at the Penn University, which a number of people signed, and he and two others came from the Penn University. They were the three non-homeless people or non-homeless-looking people, you can never tell, at least it's often harder to tell, who came to this meeting.
Why there would be somebody, what's the argument of people who would argue for it? And I think probably business community doesn't like people, don't like people laying down the street. It's aesthetics, probably a reason for it. I can see a moral reason that might be for them is to get people moving so that they're not just getting, you know, lazy proletariat. Was that the term that came up earlier? I'm just saying this is the other side. I'm not saying I'm advocating for it. But I do think that that balance should be talked about, why it's there on the other side of it. I've slept in the parks and camped out there too and been harassed and arrested at times. So I know that experience. And I know that Santa Cruz is notorious for being criminally...
The next few speakers you're going to hear are all going to be people in the audience who are speaking on the issue of this agenda item.
Harsh in times of towards the homeless people. That's my experience personally. I think that's that extreme situation. I think there's a value to having some sort of ordinance, but I do think that we should, you know, that it's just extreme here, and that there's therefore that pushing against that extreme condition. And I've done it all over the state and all over the country, slept in vehicles and outside, and this place is probably one of the most notoriously brutal anti-sleeping ordinances that I've ever experienced.
Do you have any ideas about what an ordinance would look like?
Chair Gilman asks this question.
I think one of the things that, you know, one night, if somebody's staying two or three or four nights, one night would be acceptable, but and if they move around, if they just camping someplace, that seems to be, you want to keep people moving. You want to, and it's a good idea to harass us homeless people to get us off our lazy asses so we go out and do something, you know, and be motivated to make a change in our life. But if people just set up camp, you know, and it's 24 hours plus, I mean, if somebody's just laying down in the park or wherever they're doing for one night, and they pick up and everything's gone, that's one thing. If they're still there the next day, that's another thing to me. So that would be something.
After a few days, it starts getting a little messy.
Yeah,
I noticed
absolutely.
That. I mean, papers and whatnot, beer bottles and whatnot.
Yeah, and the pigsty that comes with them, and that's something that, in the trash ordinances, I think those should be enforced. If you see garbage all over, you say, hey, the cops should enforce those things. So I'm on both sides of the argument in that sense, but I think it is a little excessively brutal in Santa Cruz.
Back when I was 18, when I first came to Santa Cruz, most of the homeless were ready to just pick up any piece of trash they had. But nowadays I see everyone leaving their trash, not having the sense to pick up off their own selves. I remember when there used to be camps where they actually had an individual trash can. I know us homeless can do the same as we used to. Have a camp, have it proper, have a designated trash can, and be picking up after ourselves. I know we can be on the cleaner side. I will tell you right now, I'm one of probably the most dirtiest persons in here. My clothes have not been washed in about 2 months. I will tell you straight. Even if I'm dirty, I gotta clean up after myself somehow, some way. Even if it's around me.
Do you have any ideas about...
Hey, yourself. It's a better way and safer way to go. If you want to keep your spot and keep yourself sleeping at night, keep your spot clean. So if there's not beer bottles, trash all about,
the cops wouldn't really arrest you.
So you'd be okay with multiple nights as long as it was kept clean? You think that would be fair?
And as long as we could go back to the old saying of out of sight, out of mind. As long as we kept our spaces clean, we should be fine. Because I know a lot of house people don't like seeing homeless. A lot of people. So might as well stay out of sight, out of mind, keep to the woods, and have our camps clean. And take in, if you bring in trash, you take it darn out.
My name is Shelly Spiegel, and I might be a little off subject here, but I think the first thing that I would like to see, I've only been homeless here 5 months, and not from here, first time in my life that I've been on the streets, 42 years old, mother of 7, grandmother of 2. On the street by choice, trying to get away from a domestic violence situation. Felt that I had no other choice. But the first thing that I have encountered out here is that homelessness and drug addicts are in the same sentence. And that's the first thing that needs to be abolished, because not all homeless people are drug addicts, as all drug addicts are not homeless. And so I'm college educated. I have a degree in physical chemistry, a law degree, and I take my bar exam in October, which I'm still studying for out here on the streets. I'm not a stupid girl, but I have no street smarts. I'm by myself, and as a woman out here, that in itself, you know, is my greatest fear in life, is being out here by myself, my lone soul. At night, it's bad. And personally, I don't, you know, camping alone is supposed to be a no-no. But when you don't know anybody, sometimes that's what you have to do. And I don't sleep very long in little periods at night because I have a fear. I have to keep, awake in some sense, know my surroundings, listen for noises. But as a woman, I still expect the same rights, my human rights that I'm entitled to by the police department, which I have put in my time and paid salaries for in my taxes, that protection instead of, degradation. I'm looked upon as... I see how people, look at me, and yes, I'm homeless, my clothes are dirty too, and I go on the food circuit of, the shelter and so forth, but I'm no different than anybody else. But I also know that people, said, it always goes back to the fundamentals we were taught in kindergarten. You play nice with others, you clean up after yourself, those rules. And yes, I don't think they should be allowed to camp in for a certain period of time. I think that you keep them moving, and that is important. But it is, it's hard when all of our stuff gets taken, destroyed by rangers or police. I myself was taken to the police department. I used to sleep on the beach thinking it was the safest place, under the lights so they could find my body in the morning, And I think that I was arrested on the beach because I had no ID. I didn't have an ID because I hitchhiked here and they took off with my bag, left me at a gas station, and I had no ID, no way to get $26 to pay for a new ID. But because I had no ID, I spent 7 hours in jail to be fingerprinted to make sure I wasn't an international terrorist, but it was scary. But I look at the police differently now. They're not here to rescue me. They're not, I'm afraid that I'm going to be homeless.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, you said about being incredibly brutal. You've identified a couple of things. Your stuff gets taken and you were arrested.
We have a somewhat primitive recording facility, which, in spite of Dr. O'Grady's valiant efforts to upgrade me, are still primitive. But there is more of this tape, so don't go away. This is the ACLU meeting on Monday. These are the voices of the people who I think made the difference in changing ACLU's at least brief, forcing them to make a brief statement of policy. Though it has to admit, I think the five members who voted for this, Steve Plage, Jay Campbell, Mithril Bowman, Daniel Etler, and Ron Pomerantz, had felt for many months that this was abusive. But it took this kind of strong language and real human suffering and really people there looking at them to get them to do this. And even then, as you'll hear, and I don't know if we're going to reach this point, Chair Gelbloom apparently tried to close the meeting without a vote, and not allowing people to be there and moving on to other business, which really upset me, and I made it real clear. You can actually hear me talking about that. You may not hear it tonight because we're going to run out of time probably. I also got a caller, and my apologies to the caller who called in. We're in the midst of this tape, and so I'm probably going to continue with it. But there was a question about, I guess it was a question about the bullying issue, which I did talk about earlier on Steve Plaich's Facebook page. You know, let's get off of Steve Plaich's Facebook page. You know, it's Steve Plaich's Facebook page. Leave it. I mean, it is interesting to discuss what kind of nonsense goes on. I do want to say regarding some of the comments made about, oh, there needs to be a safe, clean up their way and clean up their stuff. And this is based on the theory homeless people often internalize these negative images that are presented of them. Homeless people are not presented with the ability or facilities to clean up their areas. They don't have trash cans. They don't have garbage bags. They don't have toilet facilities. They don't have places to shower generally, or it's difficult to do. And they're always fearful of the police and their property being stolen. They have no place to store clean stuff and utensils to use to get clean. And so for people to suggest that, you know, that it's their fault is completely ridiculous. They've internalized the kind of phony jacket that was thrown around them. And it's quite common, but it is wrong. And it's simply in error. Let's hear some more of this, though, before the time runs out. Again, you're listening to the ACLU meeting, public testimony in favor of a moratorium on sleeping ban laws passed last Monday night. And more on this is available online at San Cruz Indie Media, a story that I put up. And you can put up with it, too. Moment of technical difficulty, which hopefully will soon be remedied. See if we can proceed with this. Here we go. Don't go away. The ACLU discussion continues.
Did an internship at El Doral County as a victim crime specialist. Now I became a victim of crime. And when I went to the police and asked them to help because it's my right. And I have never been treated so poorly as looked upon like I was a homeless girl who probably got high and regretted something that happened that night with somebody. And that's not the case, you know. But I was not listened to. My story was kind of, you know, pushed aside. It took 3 weeks for a detective to get back to me. You know, I mean, I have rights that I was given, my God-given rights. And because of where I sleep at night, where I lay my head, I shouldn't be judged or degraded or feel degraded by anybody. Home is not a structure. Home is where you make it. It's where your heart is. I'm at home here in Santa Cruz, and on the streets is where I am. It's what I make of it. I have to, for my rights, for my grandchildren, for my children, advocate that I'm somebody's daughter, I'm somebody's mother, I'm somebody's grandmother. I'm somebody. I'm not disposable. And I won't be treated like that by anybody, especially somebody who puts on a uniform and puts a badge on and swore to protect me, regardless of who I am. But that's not the case. I mean, and I know that there are people out there who give the homeless a bad name. And, you know, but I won't pay the crime for. I don't want to be punished for everybody else's crime. I want to be punished for my own crime. If I haven't committed a crime, then how dare they? And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you meet a guy and he doesn't trust you because of some girlfriend he had before. Well, why punish me for her mistakes? Let me make my own. You know?
Anybody else want to speak up?
I have one other thing to say.
Who's that person who hasn't already spoken?
Okay.
Come back here. I just want to make sure everybody has a chance to speak if they want to speak.
Have something to say.
What's your name?
My name is Matt Eubanks, but around these parts they call me Max. And when I left here 5 years ago, with my lady Danielle over there.
5 years ago, did you say?
Yeah, I left here. You know, I left here to try to get off the streets, whatever. I had an amazing adventure for 5 years. You know, I had a couple of kids, whatever. But before that, you know, I was fucking SCSK, you know, Santa Cruz Swilly Kids, you know. I'm actually I'm actually the one and only person that actually started that whole sword thing that we had for about 6 months to a year in Santa Cruz, where the tourists were coming in and they thought Santa Cruz was called Sword City. Yeah, you'd have to actually be paying attention to street rats out there to actually catch on to that. But I was actually the one that started that. And, I've witnessed Santa Cruz go through a lot of changes with this homeless thing. And I remember once I actually went over to City Hall during one of the meetings. It was just like this one, about the same sleep band. Okay, and I made a very, very accurate point to them. Okay, yeah, cops are cops, and yeah, there's a lot of them. But there are still more of us. And when I made that statement, it was before I learned how to create guns and knives and went and decided to stick my ass in a library or a Borders bookstore, what it used to be there, or Barnes & Nobles, and decided to learn how to use weapons. You know, because I was all in the whole 2012 kick, thinking the whole world was going to end. You know, I was like one of the homeless people that we would consider ourselves the warriors and defenders of all the people who are being done wrong, such as the lady over there who was newly homeless. You know, so she probably wouldn't have known about this either. And a matter of fact, during that whole sword thing, okay, a lot of people who were housies or what we would call yuppies. A lot of those people, they would go out of their way to make some kind of problem for us. Okay, so they would go out of their way, and they would think that okay, there's a homeless person carrying a weapon now. He's got to be a criminal. Okay, they would think that. Okay, and believe me, like, there's still a whole lot of us, like she said, still a whole lot of us that don't use drugs. There are some that do use drugs, and the ones that do use drugs and the ones that don't use drugs. Although the whole reason is simply this: there is pain, and pain needs to be satisfied no matter how you shape it, how you feel it, whatever. Pain is real. Okay, and the pain of having your stuff taken, the pain of having to get up in the morning and have somebody tell you, okay, you gotta move at 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, when, like, in the wintertime, the sun's not even up and it's raining like buckets. Anybody who's been out there in the wintertime in Santa Cruz during, like, the hard Arctic winter from the water rains, like me, I've had to cover a whole lot of people with blankets that I didn't even have, because they were freezing after death, because they couldn't go sleep underneath the wharf like they should have been able to. They couldn't go sleep out in the woods in their tent like they should have been able to. They had to walk around all night long and look like a fucking tweaker, even though they weren't. And the only ones that weren't having problems were the actual tweakers. You know why? Because the tweakers know how to hide. Okay, that's straight up. The tweakers know how to hide. But even that only lasts so long, because tweakers have a problem with knowing how to fix things, because before they became tweakers, half of them were working for the fucking military. Okay? No, this is all part of the same thing. This is all part of the whole sleep band.
Wait,
everything.
What we're talking about is a proposal that Lisa, you, that this chapter would make a public statement trying to stop enforcing the candy bans for a year.
This is all to help understand. Okay. How to be able to stop this thing once and for all, because the main basis of the entire thing is sleep and a place to be able to hold your stuff without having to come back and worry about it being stolen, so that those of us who want to go out and get jobs and actually be able to get jobs, because like she said, like she just stated, you don't have no money coming from nowhere, so you gotta hustle something. Okay, that's why half of us are out there slinging drugs, because we gotta hustle, because there's no other way to eat when you can't go to the soup kitchen, when you can't go to the Red Church, when you can't go make it to Elm Street, when you can't go to the shelter. All of these things are all in the same factor. So if we don't have a place to sleep, a place to store our stuff, and a means to be able to get ID so we can get jobs, this is going to be a never-ending problem.
In many instances of our
Yes, want to say something?
Yeah. And we're going to wait here because we're nearing the end of the show, and also want to give you a chance to talk, Mike, if you want, and or any callers to call in to say what they want to say. We have about 3 or 4 minutes left in the show before Uncle Dennis is from the cream to the dregs. I'll be coming back on Sunday to play the rest of this tape, and you can catch the outcome, again, by going to Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz Indie Media, you can look for it on your browser, INDY Media. And, you know, that'll give you at least my perspective on what went down. This show is also archived, in case you want to review some of the, I think, quite eloquent, outspoken, and candid statements of these folks who came to this meeting. And again, as I said, it shows me that when voices speak up loudly, that can have a real impact. Yes, it's true that Steve Plaich and company all oppose the sleeping ban. And they've opposed it probably from the word go. But they kind of have come to meeting after meeting and done absolutely nothing about the ban. They've formed committees, they've talked about it. But a very simple statement of policy, such as was presented at this meeting, was not brought up until this moment, and this happened. Actually, I don't think Plaich knew that the homeless were going to come in any numbers, and he was going to present it anyway, but was he going to demand a vote on it? That's the question, because the attempt to get a vote at the previous meeting failed. It didn't fail because people voted against it. It failed because Chair Peter Gelblum shoveled it off into oblivion, because the rest of the group of the board let that happen, as this ACLU board has for decades. And it's been a different board. You're going to be able to hear on Sunday when I come back at 9:30, Mike Rotkin giving his opposition to the resolution, his support for the sleeping ban. It has a sort of a, I don't want to say it makes me sick, because it didn't make me sick. It was quite familiar. I've heard his rap before. But you will get to hear a polished speaker essentially misleading people about dangers involved in allowing people the basic right to sleep at night.